Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning and Happy New Year to all our listeners here on Healthcare Consumerism Radio. They are joining us for our first program of 2016. We're looking forward to a great year here, 2016, with everyone. And joining me in studio is co-host Andrew Dietz. Good morning, Andrew.
Hey, Doug.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
And our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
So thank you for everyone for joining us today. Hope everyone had a great holiday. I know it's the 15th. That was a little bit a while ago, and the year is starting off really fast. But we're really excited about this year. A lot going to happen out in the marketplace, certainly in an election year. You can't not talk about that. You know, we'll see how that dialogue continues to progress throughout this year. But, you know, a hot topic is private exchanges. You know, what's happening with private exchanges. And you know, I think 2015 was an interesting year of private exchange. I think we had some very good adoption out in the marketplace. Maybe it did not advance as fast as some of the real positive, you know, proponents, but some of that's to be expected. It's a year that the market kind of, you know, took a time to regroup. You know, technology providers, the exchanges themselves, looked at how they needed to improve their models, how they needed to focus on customer service with who they had in their exchanges, how they needed to improve and round out their model. Brokers continued to figure out who to work with, how to work with, and how they could use exchanges to serve their clients better and build their practices. And employers, which is the big sweet spot, were saying, okay, you know, which models are right for us? And I think as we move into 2016, what we see and what other experts in the market see is a really rapid movement in 2016 and 17, you know, and particularly with the mid-market. You know, Andrew, looking at that mid-market, those two, you know, companies with 250 lives to 3,000 lives, you know, that need help. And they need help.
They don't have the infrastructure, and they tend to be willing and able to adopt technologies and systems like this maybe a little faster than some of the larger ones.
And I think a couple the HR benefit people are sitting right next to the CFO and CEO is a little deeper connection.
May report into.
Right. And the three principles of, you know, positive principles of adopting exchange, from cost containment to reduction of administrative resources, you know, needed, you know, with your HR, you know, and benefits teams. And third, providing really good benefits and plans of choice to your employees makes a lot of sense. And
so there'll still be tremendous disruption in 2016, positive, mm-hmm. we hope, and believe, in healthcare consumerism from private exchanges. And as a result, we've got our two conferences this year focused on, dedicated to the private exchange topic, one coming up in February in Dallas, and the other
23rd and 24th. Yep.
Please join us for that. TheIHCCForum.com. Still time to sign up. We'd love to have you. Last year was sold out, and phenomenal conversations. We expect the same this year. And we have a second show because things are changing so quickly in this market. We've timed one for this quarter, but one for the fall of 2016 as well.
First week of September, which is really a look ahead to the year, you know, the following year when companies are budgeting. But
more broadly on you know, trends in this year for healthcare consumers, I find, you know, I was encouraged to see PwC's Health Research Institute did an annual report, and they continue to rank consumerism in their top 10 most important trends to impact the industry this year. What else do you see, Doug, as being big healthcare consumerism trends?
Well, I think, you know, we cannot talk about healthcare consumerism without talking about wellness and where wellness is. And a lot of different moving parts of wellness. And wellness will be a big, big part of our May event, by the way, which is May 24th through 26th. You know, first of all, you look at some rebranding of wellness around total well-being, you know, stepping up around just physical wellness to really look at financial wellness, very, very important, you know, topic. You're looking at addressing depression, looking at addressing, you know, all the different elements of helping your employee population, you know, really, you know, you know, have a better well-being of themselves and, you know.
So healthcare consumers.
Their families, too, not just the employees, their families.
Their families, including their pets sometimes,
yeah.
as we know. So all of that affects one's health, one's ability to perform effectively in the workforce.
And then certainly you can't talk about wellness without talking about the impact of digital, both in the digital dashboards emerging, the remote monitoring devices, and certainly, you know, the wearables and what's
yeah.
happening with wearables. And employers themselves and those working with them are beginning to understand how to integrate wearables
mm-hmm.
into their wellness programs. And they'll play a key role, you know, moving forward.
So and we were pleased to have, for example, Garmin with us in Las Vegas, and they'll be with us in Dallas as well, and it's nice to see, you know, one of the leaders in that space really getting directly engaged with us, meaning with the employer marketplace.
I think the other trend, Andrew, to answer your question, is that, you know, 2016 is being predicted by some experts to be the growth of telehealth with employers, where employers are really going to embrace telehealth solutions, and we happen to concur with that. It's a very logical mm-hmm. part of not only cost containment, but care, which employers care about for their employees, providing access to care and providing access to preventive services to care. Also, in a broader term, other healthcare access from direct primary care networks emerging.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask about that.
Concierge medicine solutions emerging. You know, to, you know, developing of companies actually bringing to the market networks, putting together networks, bring to the markets that can work with self-funded companies, not just relying on, you know, the health plans
mm-hmm.
to provide those networks. Certainly, many of our sponsors are in the transparency space. I kind of hate that term. You know, it's more right care, right price. I think I just copied one of our sponsors', you know, taglines. But it really is, you know, helping. You know, first of all, helping employers better manage cost control by providing better tools to their employees, consumers, to find that right care, right price, right accessibility. So we're going to continue to see the growth, you know, of that.
So our colleague Ron Bachman has the five phases of healthcare consumerism or five stages. Where are we in 2016? Where will we be?
Well, I think, you know, Andrew, to answer that question specifically, is that it depends on who you are. I think where many companies.
I'm Andrew.
Yeah,
did you
Andrew.
Not remember? Oh, you mean what kind
yeah,
of company
yeah.
you are? Okay.
They are. Some companies are in the advanced stages of healthcare consumerism. You know, they're moving into the advanced stages. Some companies are still moving into the initial stages of healthcare consumerism. So it varies, you know, by where those companies are.
Yeah.
But the industry as its whole, you know, is developing solutions and innovation, you know, across the generations of care. You know, here in our own city at Atlanta, and we may be able to get them involved in May with us, you know, Dan Cathy, you know, who owns Chick-fil-A for
yeah.
anyone who doesn't, is very committed to create a
building a wellness center,
a
yeah.
major wellness center for the community. Because if you look at Ron's generations of care, when you get down to the final generation, to have, you know, true healthcare consumerism,
mm-hmm.
to have true well-being,
right.
the whole community needs to be engaged.
So when you started this Institute for Healthcare Consumerism endeavor, it seems like the idea of healthcare consumerism equated solely to insurance,
yeah.
high deductible. Yep. And today,
HSA, HRA, high deductible, FSA. Yep.
And that's still a part of it, but that is to say healthcare consumerism is only that is severely limiting and not the reality.
Right. Ron and I talk about it all the time. Our sweet spot is not about health insurance reform.
Mm-hmm.
It's about healthcare reform.
Mm-hmm.
And healthcare consumerism is that reform. So, you know, our sweet spot this year is to serve this market with our community and continue to inform, provide a place people can come to. You know, look for us out there. Look for what we're doing in the IHC University. Certainly our four national events held in four key regions of the country. You already talked about the private exchange forums. Our other two events is our major event in here in May and then in Las Vegas. And the key to Las Vegas will be it will follow the election. So you will be able to get a real perspective on and a reflection, everyone together there, the conversation will be bubbling about, okay, now where are we going, you know, depending on who is elected. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we should have a great year this year, and we look forward to everyone being with us, and thank you guys who are with us now. And we'd like to welcome our first guest onto the program now, somebody who's been on with us before and has spoken at our events, Bill Sweetum, who is with ECFC as their legislative technical director. But Bill is most known for his time in the Senate Finance Committee. So, Bill, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing great. Hey, a very dear friend of yours who's our advisor, who you know well and is normally here as the co-host, except he is in his semi-retirement place down in Florida. Ron wishes you well today. He wanted me to make sure that I said a happy hello from him.
Oh, well thank you. Well, I'm in semi-retirement in Florida, too, but continuing to do work for ECFC. And
pretty exciting stuff happened at ECFC. I mean, our good friend Marty Tressel has joined you guys up there, too, and I'm happy for Marty. I think that's a good move by ECFC. For our audience that might not know ECFC, just give a little bit of a framework of ECFC.
Sure. ECFC is a trade association that really focuses in on a lot of consumer-directed accounts, particularly flexible spending arrangements, health reimbursement arrangements, health savings accounts, also other types of flexible compensation like transit benefits and 401k plans. What we try to do is we've got both an advocacy side where we try to advocate both to the Congress and to the regulators about matters important to flexible compensation. And then we also provide a lot of services internally to our members in order to make sure that they're on top of what's important for, you know, in this space. And we provide a lot of education and certifications for people, because this is really an important area of benefits law, and it's also a very complicated area of benefits law. I think one of the things that's going to be interesting is in the next in March we're going to be having our annual meeting where we're going to be doing both those things, both doing some advocacy and also doing a lot of a lot of education on what's going on new in flexible benefits.
Yeah, you guys do nice work. I normally join you, and hopefully I can be up there with you in March. I always enjoy that time up there. I mean, I can't let you off this call, Bill, without we all talking together about the Cadillac tax. And
sure.
I know you guys have been very involved in looking to at least come up with some revisions. So what do you think that the tax sits now? Do you think it's going to just keep getting kicked down the road? Where do you see it right now, Bill?
Well, I think we were very happy that that there was a two-year delay in the
right.
implementation of the Cadillac tax as part of the end-of-the-year appropriations bill. That really doesn't really go all the way for us.
Right.
We're
right.
looking, you know, the big thing is that these flexible spending arrangements, these flexible benefit accounts, do get pulled into the Cadillac tax. And what we're seeing is that employers don't want to be subject to the Cadillac tax, and they're looking at dropping these important plans. And so what we did all of last year was do a lot of education to people on the Hill about, you know, the impact of the Cadillac tax on these flexible benefit programs. In fact, while our primary objective was to have complete repeal of the Cadillac tax, we also talked to them about, you know, as an intermediate step, why don't you exempt out employee contributions to FSAs and employee contributions to HSAs from the calculation of the tax. And we did get a lot of favorable response from members and the and members' staff. I think a lot of health policy people didn't realize that employee contributions to FSAs and to HSAs would be included in the tax. Of course, the tax people did. So while we were, while we were happy with this, with the delay, really we're going to be continuing our both our education and advocacy efforts with Congress and congressional staff. We think that there might be some interest in introducing legislation, standalone legislation this year, which exempts out employee contributions to FSAs and HSAs. And I'm not at liberty right now to say which members of Congress are thinking of, about doing that. But you know, we do have a number of members of Congress that are very are very sympathetic to our plight. So,
Bill, that are employer contributions being talked about as well, like an employer contribution to an employee's HSA, or
at this point we have it's been mentioned, but I think that in the first steps, I think that what they wanted to do would be something a little bit more limited. Because you know there are limits on employee contributions into an FSA, and you know there are limits to employee contributions into a HSA. So I think that the initial view of this was just employee contribution, because it just doesn't It doesn't seem fair that an employee's own contribution would be treated as an employer contribution for purposes of the tax.
Right.
So I think we get a lot of traction on that end.
And the argument is, an employer, the way I understand Cadillac tax, or an employee can still contribute, but as the law is written, but it would be after tax dollars. The argument is to allow an employee to contribute with pre-tax dollars, right?
Right. Let's look at a contribution to an HSA. If you do it through a pre-tax contribution through your employer, you not only get the tax deduction, you get that contribution is not counted towards your income tax. It's also not counted towards your Social Security tax, your FICA taxes.
Right.
And if the employer does not offer that, the employee is still going to be able to make a contribution to an HSA, but the employee will pay income tax on the amount of the contribution, pay FICA tax on the amount of the contribution, and then take an above-the-line deduction for the amount of the contribution. So essentially, they're paying the additional tax, the additional FICA tax, on that HSA contribution. That's not fair. That's not what Congress intended.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And to look at an FSA, if we don't get some revisions made, I mean, HSAs may remain even with the Cadillac tax. I mean, with all the negatives you're highlighting, I think it's a good point. But FSAs, and if there's not some revisions, will be dramatically hurt and even go away, right? That's the big concern.
Oh, yeah, yes. And that's counterproductive here.
Yeah, it is.
I think one of the things that if you take the advocates of the Cadillac tax at their word, what they were trying to do was to make people more effective consumers of healthcare. And a Cadillac tax maybe would increase deductibles and copays, which would lead to that. Well, we already are providing through FSAs and HSAs a means for employees to be more effective consumers of health care. And to then have the Cadillac tax deprive employees of you know, of the availability of that consumer friendly account just seems counterproductive.
And also, Bill, I can't, you know, we're hearing in an election year, and I'm not going to get into the politics of it, but all sides talk about the middle class, and you're highlighting, you know, unless we can get some revisions to the Cadillac tax, we're really hurting the middle class, are we not?
Yes, we are. One thing that everybody should realize is that, you know, our studies show that the people who have the average income of people who have an FSA is about $57,000, which is 300% of the federal poverty level. Well, you know, the subsidies under the for health insurance under the exchange go up to people that with up to 400% of federal poverty level. So these are the people that we are concerned about, people at the 300% of poverty level. The other thing is, and this I sometimes hear from people on the Hill, is that, oh, FSAs, they only benefit high-paid people. They get the tax breaks there. But, you know, one of the best things about an FSA is that it is a budgeting mechanism for regular middle-class people. They get amounts taken out of their paycheck every pay period, put in which can be used for health care, qualified health expenses. Well, gee, that's a wonderful budget, you know, a budget mechanism for them, and so that they, you know, so that they know that, you know, gee, when I have you know, a high deductible that I have to, you know, a big copay in March, well, I've got money that's been put away for that, and that I'm going to be able to access that money for health benefits. If you take away the ability for people to have an FSA, it doesn't mean, you know, they're going to have to scrounge around to find ways to pay for those high deductibles and copays, rather than having already having budgeted for those amounts through regular payroll deductions.
And I think, you know, ECFC did great work along with some others. I mean, you know, we just got the FSA kind of in good order. I mean, first of all, we capped it so there's no excess out there. I mean, there's an amount that is reasonable. You know, we add the ability for some to carry over, so a consumer, meaning that employee, can better manage those funds to use it properly, right? So
you know, ECFC has been very much involved in trying to make sure that people can effectively use their FSAs and their HSAs to be effective healthcare consumers. You know, and so that's why I think that as we explain this to members of Congress and their staff, they sort of get the feeling that, gee, you know, HSAs and FSAs are a good thing, and maybe we should do something so that they're not taken away due to the Cadillac tax.
Yep. Well, Bill, listen, we're towards the end of our program. It's always great having you on with us. You know, I'd like to give you a minute to kind of recap a little bit for our audience, if you would, please.
Sure. I think that you know, if people are concerned about the impact of the Cadillac tax on FSAs and HSAs, you know, something that they could do is ECFC has been instrumental in setting up a website called My Money, My Health, which we are using as a very effective lobbying tool with members of Congress. This way, people are able to go in and tell their personal stories about why an FSA and why an HSA has been very helpful to them. And those are the sort of stories that that people in Congress like to hear. And so that could be exceptionally helpful. And that I would tell your listeners that might be a very good thing to do. It would be to take a look and to go on that website and leave their stories and let people in Congress know that HSAs and FSAs are really a good thing, and it's a good consumer-based product.
Yeah, we agree. Well, listen, great to have you on. We here at the IAC look forward to working closely with DCFC on your initiatives as well. You take care and have a great weekend, Bill. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
Bye now.
I think it, Cadillac taxes, I hope they can succeed with that because it really hurts consumers. It hurts account-based plans, even to the point that we can get some revisions made on employer contributions. You know, if employers put an HSA in there,
What was the motivation behind Cadillac tax to begin with? How did it get?
It's a way to fund the ACA. I mean, that's, without a lot of thought into, the bill point, the ramifications,
Tax the rich.
Particularly when you think about the proponents of the HSA and who those proponents were, they're all about, hey, the middle class, and others, and you're actually taking, funds away from that consumer. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, to Bill's point, I don't think that was thought through. I think a lot of us hope the Cadillac tax is repealed, it goes away. But if not, at least if we can get these consumer accounts better taken care of. I mean, that's the real positive. And Nikki's right. I mean, consumers and we in this industry, employers and their teams, brokers, everyone needs to really, pound the drums and, help the advocacy groups like ECFC, carry the ball into Washington and try to make sure we do get some of these revisions made, or get it to go away. So.
Good.
So Private Exchange Forum in Dallas, right around the corner. We've got some really interesting things happening there. We open up with a quality consultant panel, really giving their perspective on where they see the market today and where they see the market going, what workforces are moving into exchanges, what they're doing with their clients, et cetera. We then follow with our conference chair, John Young, moderating and leading what should be a very interesting friendly feud.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're bringing, two of the industry leaders, Buck and Towers, into a panel to face off and discuss with two of the emerging players, Maestro and ADP, which is, the 800-pound gorilla now in the exchange space.
Big company, but still the challenger as they recently launched.
So it should be very interesting and fruitful discussion.
Will there be boxing gloves involved with this, or is this a...
I think
it's a gentle conversation.
It's the friendly feud.
And if you,
I think a lot to be learned from that discussion from all parties. I think that's the key for our attendees. A lot to be learned from this dialogue. And then we're doing something new and unique that we'll also do in May and probably our other events. We're doing a rapid fire general session where we are. We'll have between 7 and 10 companies. Give a 3 to 5 minute elevator pitch on their solution and in the exchange environment, their solution and the fit with the exchange model.
What's especially innovative that they have come out with?
What are they doing? It might be a telehealth player. And what's the value proposition for having telehealth in an exchange model? It could be a wellness player. It could be a voluntary benefit. It could be exchange, provider them.
So it's a quick stream of innovation that our employer or broker audience can listen to, get a quick download, and then afterwards get a chance to dive deeper in direct conversation with whichever of those they find.
There's going to be no Q&A except a couple questions from the moderators. It will be our co-chairs Meg Murphy with Maxwell and Ernie Harris with Maestro. Maybe one or two questions from them. And then to your point, Andrew, the Q&A takes place in the reception following.
Mm-hmm.
So, those attendees who, maybe a light bulb goes off to say, hey, I'd like to know more about this, have the ability to then go have a dialogue in the innovation showcase with some of these innovators that we'll be presenting. So it's really designed to let people get a flavor of what innovation is taking place in the marketplace and what is the value proposition, you know, what is the fit, value for the organization. And then, you know, certainly we'll close with our ever-popular employer panel.
Mm-hmm.
Having some key employers in the employer panel. So a lot of good dialogue. You know, the key to our private exchange events, all of our events, but our private exchange events at this time when there's so much discussion around what is it, who's doing it, will it work for us, is to put you in the middle. Is to put you in the middle of the discussion. You know, our exchange events put you in the middle of the discussion,
mm-hmm.
Not only about innovation, but about case studies, about practicality.
So where are we with our special rates and opportunities for people to come on board?
Early bird right now. Early bird, and early bird ends the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well timed, in January. So right now, go to our site, you know, you can go to www.dihccforum.com,
mm-hmm.
And access this program that I was talking about, access, you know, who the innovators will be that will, you know, be showcasing their solutions there,
right?
And look at our registration.
Now, let me ask you, Doug, if people, well, whether they can or can't, if they can but their colleagues can't, will we be videoing and making available in our IHC University general session content for this event?
Yeah, it'll be.
We've done that for.
It'll be afterwards, right?
Yeah, so that'll be available afterwards. So even if you can't make it, I'd encourage you to sign up for IHC University. It's, you know, it's chump change.
Yep, it really is.
And you get access to all of this great content, or a large portion of this great content, you can watch in your pajamas at home on a Saturday night, because we know that's what you like to do. And no, I'm just kidding about that. But you can, at your convenience, get a download and a replay of this excellent content and stay ahead of the marketplace. So join us in Dallas. Whether or not you can join us in Dallas, please sign up for the IHC University
And
Insider program.
And I think to your point, too, about IHC University Insider, Andrew, if you want to get a sneak peek on what may be coming in Dallas, in other words, by looking at last year's events,
mm-hmm.
if you want to go look at the videos from last year in Dallas, last year in Baltimore, and get the flavor of the type of discussions that take place, you know, please, you know,
yeah,
become an IHC University Insider.
We have our next guest teed up. Oh, we're having some technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Please stand by.
Well, let's talk about May. Let's talk about May, because you can register now for our May forum. Our May forum will have almost 1,200 people there. And that's our Soup to Nuts A to Z, you know, that talks about, you know, all aspects of healthcare consumer. And, that will be held May 24th to 26th mm-hmm. in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Cobb Galleria, where we've been for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, we will, you know, we're going to do a really cover all aspects of healthcare consumerism, but we're going to kick off the event. The Atlanta Wellness Council, which is 30 of the largest companies in greater Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
have agreed to come in with their teams and do our opening keynote.
That's awesome.
And really share with attendees from around the country that will be coming on what is happening in Atlanta. What are these leading companies doing around wellness today?
Right.
And what are they looking to do tomorrow?
I mean, and there is so much going on here in this market. And for our listeners, Doug and I and the IHC are based in Atlanta, so, you know, we know this market better than any other. I mean, there's a lot, just so much going on here in the healthcare technology arena, but we're such a center for Fortune 500 corporate headquarters and, you know, regional headquarters that we've just got a plethora of opportunities to bring employers to you to tell you what's going on. And Doug, you know, one of our colleagues and I met earlier this week with the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce and their, you know, the folks that are heading up their health sciences group, and they are interested in bringing their employers to the table as well. So we should have our best year yet, and encourage everybody to attend that event. Both, you know, we're same place you can get to our Dallas event information, the IHCCforum.com.
Then talk about, let's just talk a little bit, you know, while we, when our guests about the rest of our events, because you kind of alluded to it too. And you know, if you're an employer out there, we know your schedules are getting tight. So, you know, we just talked about Dallas and Atlanta. Baltimore is our second private exchange events, which is the September 8th through 9th. You can go on our site and find information about Baltimore and save that date. And our IHC Forum West event will be November 9th through the 11th, which will follow the election. That will be that Tuesday. The event is the Wednesday through Thursday. So vote and get on a plane and come out and join us and join the discussion about what's coming in the year ahead. I think the key things about both these events, you know, Baltimore and West are scheduled really to enable companies that are working on these 6 to 18 month planning cycles to really talk about you know, where they're going for 2018 plan year. And then, you know, West is geared to give an insight as to what's happening during this open enrollment period. So what plans should you be making for the 2018 plan year? So a lot ahead in the year 2016.
Oh, that's good. I'm excited, and we're off to a good start. So we are, the only place we're not off to a good start is from a technology standpoint. Our Blog Talk Radio servers seem to be giving us some trouble, and we appreciate your holding on. We may have to bring you our next interview in a separate show, perhaps next week.
Yeah, our Blog Talk Radio platform is having some server issues, so we apologize to our audience. You know,
But so yeah, we will. I think before we go and wrap up for today, Doug, what other words of wisdom, what kind of encouragement, what would you tell our audience to be thinking about now as 2016 flies forward?
You know, with the Cadillac tax, you know, while it didn't go away, being moved out 2 years, 2016 is a moving year. It's a year that, you know, we talked earlier about exchange. I think you're going to see movement in exchanges. And, you know, employers, if you haven't looked at it, I think you owe it to your CEO and your employees to take a look at it, to try to understand what it is and what it isn't, because there's still a lot of misconceptions out there as to what models can work, what models are. I mean, you can do anything from a self-funded model to a model sitting on a captive to, you know, a fully insured model to an individual small group. So just a lot of innovative solutions out there around exchanges. You do not have to be married to defined contribution. We think it's a good thing to marry it to defined contribution. You're not disconnecting from your workforce if you move to exchange unless you choose to do that, unless you want to do that. So just a lot of things that I think people need to understand, even those selling and advising, you know, their clients on exchanges, need to seek to understand about exchanges. But very disruptive, very innovative, very solid solution for the right companies and the right workforce. But the overarching is, you know, we have 160 million lives in covered by employer-sponsored benefits. Big number. And the majority are moving to healthcare consumers and programs. They're either down the road, to your point earlier, into different generations, or they're moving there and moving there pretty rapidly. And part of healthcare consumers and programs, you know, from your HSA and high deductible choices, to the networks that you are connecting with to provide access to those networks, to the emergence of voluntary benefits. You know, we really didn't talk about that. Voluntary benefits are exploding across the landscape because it enables consumers, meaning those employees and their families, to come in and choose the right supplemental health benefits that help them manage the risk for their families and take care of their families whether it's, you know, critical illness, whether it's accident, whether it's dental, vision, and hearing. And then voluntary non-health benefits are emerging because that enables a family to choose the lifestyle benefits for their family. You know, we kind of joke about pet insurance, but to all of us who own pets, it's really not a joke.
No, not at all.
And that may be a right choice for you.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about legal benefits. You know, IROG that is with us and a good sponsor of ours. I mean, when you understand their solution, you understand the financial wellness aspect of having access to lawyers.
Mm-hmm. And even to have that sort of a stop loss on that cost taken care of. Is a stress reducer, and you know
when you have access to auto home mortgage through somebody like Liberty that's a partner of ours, and you know you have access to services that can really help you take better care of your family. And then you move into healthcare access, and you know where, you know, because it really is about healthcare access going forward, and it's about affordable healthcare access, and it's about the right care. So whether it's a direct primary care network, you know, like a Spendwell Health is rolling out that allows you to access, or whether it's, you know, accessing a direct primary care physician, you know themselves, you know, directly. You know, telehealth we just talked about, very dynamic, very high growth. I mean, and not just for rural America. Some people say it's for people that are in rural America. It's for everyone.
Right.
You can sit in
it. It is a great solution for rural healthcare situations.
It's a great solution for that. And a great solution for, you know, your Hispanic and some of your, you know, people that struggle going into a doctor's office. You provide,
because they're concerned about language issues.
Right. So, and then transparency and all that, those tools that are emerging enable you to find the right, you know, the right care, you know, for the right price. And I'm not trying to limit anything. There's just so much innovation. And then certainly we end with, and not ending with, wellness, and from wellness incentives to total well-being to traditional wellness programs, digging down and getting deeper and providing really quality ROI. So, well, I think we got our guest on the program, guys. And
great.
Hey
Seth, there. Welcome to our program.
How you doing? Thanks for having me. I was going to make a joke that I crashed the servers with, you know, so much excitement and buzz about this.
Sorry.
That's the sound of our server crashing.
Hey, Seth, great to have you on, my friend. You know, and let me introduce Seth. Seth Ravine is the Chief Revenue Officer for Aclaris that was recently acquired, you know, by the Willis Towers Watson Group. And great to have you on here, Seth, with us. And, again, I do apologize, you know, for the delay, but we're connected now. So, give our audience a little background on Aclaris for those who may not know you guys.
Yeah, so Aclaris provides the software and services that supports all account-based health plans. So whether it's a FSA, an HSA, HRA, or even tuition and commuter, we can provide that to our partners in a white label approach. So they get to focus on, you know, building their brand, promoting their brand and experience, and leveraging their sales relationships, but still getting, you know, industry-leading solutions.
That's great. And you're part of the, you know, the Willis Towers Watson family now. Congratulations on that. You have a unique outlook on this year ahead. Kind of share that. What do you see for 2016? Share that with our audience, if you would, please.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the macro trends in healthcare are staying pretty consistent, right? You know, we're talking about ACA and the Cadillac tax, and what this does to, you know, the health plans, what it means to the providers and to the employers, really is culminating down at the individual level. So this notion of healthcare consumerism, we're entering, it can't be a buzzword anymore. We're actually in the phase where the industry has to start delivering on a true integrated experience. And, you know, what that means to me is, you know, how do we help individuals navigate all facets of this? So are they selecting the right benefits? Are they maximizing those benefits? And then when they do go and utilize, you know, are they making healthy life choices? And then when they do go utilize the healthcare system, are they doing it in a financially and, you know, resource responsible way?
You know, there's a lot of talk about health literacy, which is pretty important. But I think there's an equal discussion about, and I think you're alluding to it, about what companies like yourself and others are doing around decision support, because, you know, how literate does the consumer really want to be versus tell me the two or three choices that I need to make based upon who I am and what my family is, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we look at it as the complexity of the healthcare environment, the benefits and the choices they make are outpacing the knowledge of an individual. And we have to quickly close that gap, or individuals are going to make wrong choices, be upset, and then, you know, go back and scream at their employers or at the, you know, the government, and that's not good for anybody.
What do you see in the marketplace around, you know, what you guys are doing in Married with Exchanges? Where do you see exchanges trending in 2016?
Yeah, so
you're a pretty important part of an exchange model too, so.
Yeah, we hope to be. You know, I mean, I think some of the big trends, right, that we were talking about is, you know, the account-based health plans continue to grow. And, you know, we're seeing it both in the HRAs and the HSAs. And, you know, so, you know, giving – this is taking hold. I think 82% of employers offers an account-based health plan in 2015. And but we're not seeing – everybody adopted. So let's say 15 to 17 million HSAs were opened in 2015. There were still something like 6 million others who had a chance to take advantage of this tool but didn't do it. And so when we look at how the exchanges and, you know, can play into this is, you know, again, are people having the right decisions? Are they going through and making the decisions that are going to help them maximize their dollars and benefits? Or are they just buying the the lowest premium plan and then not taking advantage of, you know, the HSAs and the other tools that make that affordable?
No, I think that's well. I think that's actually well said. You know, I talk to people a lot, meaning consumers, friends on the street, and they'll say, "Yeah, we have an HSA high deductible." I said, "You have your HSA card?" And they said, "No. How do I get that?"
Well, it's, you know, that education piece, you know, I think employers are trying to do a decent job at enrollment, but how do we continue the education throughout the year, right? How do we give compassionate guidance? And it's going to be really different if you're a millennial and you've got a lot of time to invest, and typically you've got low costs around healthcare. That's one thing. If you're, you know, a baby boomer and you're close to retirement, what are you doing today to start taking advantage and preparing for, your retirement healthcare costs? Which, you know, right now, individuals are woefully prepared for retirement, but even in that planning, something like 40% of individuals don't even consider their healthcare costs in retirement.
You know, one of the things, and I respect your opinion on this too. One of the things, Seth, that I think bodes well for engagement and education is that where we are today with healthcare consumerism in really the majority adoption phase, and, you know, we got all the little pockets like you're talking about, but the commonality is that wellness used to have to stand on its own trying to get engagement. Your piece, account-based plans, used to have it stand on its own getting engagement. Voluntary benefits, the same. If you look across the compendium, there's a commonality, you know, with employers and their advisors and others saying, hey, engagement, education is across our compendium of our benefit and health offerings. And I think that bodes really well for account-based plans. It bodes really well for engagement, you know, across that compendium. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, my background before I joined Aclaris, I was with a healthcare consumer company called Silverlink Communications. And,
yeah,
you know, we would work with health plans and pharmacy benefit management companies and wellness companies on how to engage members and how to move the needle. How do we actually change their behavior? And over a billion touch points with healthcare consumers. And I'll tell you, it boils down to, you know, people are most will change behavior at a higher rate when either they had a new diagnosis or money is being spent. And so when I came to Aclaris and I look at the spending accounts and the savings accounts, this is incredible. You know, we get up to, on average, 12, every individual who has an HSA will touch their account 12 times a year on average, right? So we can pull people in. They're actually making some sort of transaction, and they came there because they had treatment. So this is a golden opportunity where someone is actually open to education, open to new ideas, whether taking advantage of transparency tools or treatment decision tools, or some of the benefits out there that actually go out and will negotiate on behalf of the consumer on EOBs and services. How do we actually help them make intelligent, informed decisions about what they're going to spend and what's the best way to finance it?
Yep. Seth, let's shift gears just a little bit. Earlier in our show, we were talking about legislation, and I wonder if you can share your thoughts on ways employers can ensure that any legislation that's coming down the line this year doesn't cause any unneeded stress. So employer health and well-being based on regulatory stress.
Yeah, I have a big grin on my face right now because I am not a legislation expert, and there are we support ECFC and other organizations that help us navigate this. But what I do know is that this is a fluid market, right, and that the environment isn't settled. And so what we, with Willis Towers Watson as our parent company now, and what we have through our existing partners, is we're continuing to see that employers are taking actions into their own hands. And what I mean by that is that the employers who can really empower their employees and to understand what the dynamics are in the marketplace, why all these changes are coming, and that one individual is different, everyone's a different, unique individual and that has different needs. If we can educate them on how to spend their benefit dollars wisely and then maximize that, whatever happens in legislation, they'll be prepared for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty well said. I think we all know the concerns with the legislation, and hopefully we'll, the heavy lifting from ECFC and your old friend who's now heading up ECFC, former Aclaris teammate. Hopefully they'll get some of the good work done that will, help us all in the end and help primarily the consumers that are going to be hurt if we don't get some things, changed through the Cadillac tax. How can plans and benefit professionals, help consumers know when and how to use money from different types of spending accounts? What can be done to help better educate them or to help them?
Yeah, there's a couple different. When I think of this problem, there's a couple key pieces. One is that an HSA is a health savings account, and there's still an overwhelming use of the health savings account to be a spending account. And it serves that purpose. So that's not a wrong way to utilize it, and everyone's situation is different. But, we're starting to see some stats, and we're going to be doing a webinar series on these throughout 2016 of how does a millennial approach healthcare benefits and, specific to the spending accounts, how does a baby boomer look at this, et cetera. And every other consumer market understands that people are different, lifestyles, what their knowledge is today, et cetera. And within healthcare, we have a very complex system. And if I'm new to healthcare benefits, or I have a life-changing event, whether it's a newborn or some new diagnosis, right, how I utilize that's different. And so the individuals still overwhelmingly look to the employer for guidance, and the employers need to really embrace that. So, again, help people at that point where they're, going to their spending accounts and savings accounts. Why are they going there? What other guidance and tools can I give them? And then the one-size-fits-all is not going to work. You can't just blast out information. It's got to be pertinent, real-time, and compassionate, guidance at that point.
Yeah, it's really the heart of a true healthcare consumerism program too, and why they're emerging, developing plans of choice, because every family, every individual is different.
Yeah, and that's the exciting opportunity that we have as an industry, right? I mean, we are finally putting real options out there. We're putting real dollars into the hands of the individuals to make these decisions. Let's not screw it up, right? Let's make sure they're doing it the right way.
Exactly right. Seth, we got about a minute and a half to go here on the program, and it's been great having you on here. I'd like to allow you to kind of package, some of your thoughts and leave our audience with some takeaways.
Yeah, so, my background and what we're doing within Willis Towers Watson is really trying to get to the heart of consumerism and health. And, we don't want to be just an administrator of an account. we want to really figure out how we can partner with these employers and these and the employees and individuals to make, you know, to really pull that integrated service. But we aren't going to do it alone. And so as an industry, you know, what, you know, the challenge that we have in front of us is how do we create that integrated experience? And then the second part, and we didn't touch on it, but it's something I'm really excited about, is the whole notion of health and wealth. And we're really starting to see people dig in deep on this. And what are people doing today for retirement? Because the reality is an individual can't rely on employer-sponsored health plans, probably, you know, as a millennial, that's not an option that baby boomers might have had. And, you know, Social Security, we're not quite sure, you know, that, you know, what you do as a millennial to prepare for that, is it? So how does an individual today start accounting for retirement planning the right way? What tools do they have in front of them? So, you know, your 401k, IRAs, and then obviously HSAs. Because, you know, the studies we see are, you know, HSAs can help prevent up to 25% of costs in late-stage retirement. And that's what we really want to get people focused on and working towards.
That's a good message, Seth. Let our audience know how they can get in touch with you.
They can email me at Seth, S-E-T-H, dot Ravine, R-A-V-I-N-E, at Acclaris, and that's ACCLARIS.com.
Hey, Seth, thank you so much. Have a great weekend up there. And are you in Tampa or Minnesota today?
Unfortunately, I'm in Minnesota today. But we'll brave the cold this week, and hopefully I can get to Tampa soon.
All right. Take care, and I hope to see you real soon. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Seth. Good stuff. I'm glad we got him on. To our audience out there, thanks for joining us this week. Remember, private exchange form, early bird rate ends in about another week and a half. Register at theihccforum.com, and we will all talk again next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.